He's not here.
Next one.
Got it.
Seattle. He's close.
Yeah. Where'd you know him from?
I don't know.
You didn't. Who did?
I take my dog. I take the dogs everywhere I go. I love it.
I know. I take the cat everywhere.
I know. We're just gonna pick it up. I swear. It doesn't matter how many times
he goes. He travels in Patrick's circle.
They come with their mom. And then part time for 3 months or 2 months.
Awesome. Still, I have a bunch of care places right near work.
And then also the nanny that likes the work. My mom still works for them, and she's kind of interested in doing it. She's still nice. She's working for 30 years.
What does she?
She just helps her around the house.
She's in the
house now. Oh, okay.
My mom just never could.
We were raised. You had a lot of exposure to my nanny.
Yeah.
Wow. So she loves her. Yeah.
She doesn't look Asian, that baby. Or the typical baby.
But so you have, you might have to use her.
I don't know. She really, I was like, do you really want to use
five days a week? Yeah, we went to wash it up. Well, she gets a week full time.
That makes sense. Yeah, it's $290 a week at the place I was looking at. It's like $1,000.
College tuition.
My mom, she's wearing pink hair. She's walking in right now. With the pink hair. And I just got certified in Greek Bachelor of Acupuncture, so I did it on her ears, and they're all gold.
So she's in her store.
Yeah.
And she also
taught at Clark. She teaches at WSU.
Okay.
Hi. Mom.
No. Are we ready?
I was wanting to see how her ears
work. How her ears
battlefield?
Yeah. So this got started in Year 2000, it was actually starting with Battlefield for Speakers. We experienced injuries in the way of pain management and like helping with PTSD.
Cool.
And it's on the ear, there's 5 different spots. So I went at Boone. It was a training for docs and advanced practice nurses. And I got certified in it.
Oh, nice.
So the October 18th meeting of the Commission on Aging will now come to order. You've all reviewed the agenda. Are there any corrections or additions to the agenda? If not, may I have a motion to approve?
Motion to approve the agenda for October 18th.
Is there a second?
Second.
All those in favor?
Aye. Aye.
All those opposed? You reviewed the minutes from September 20th. Are there any additions or corrections to the minutes? Not may I have a motion to approve the minutes?
I make a motion.
Is there a second?
Second.
All those in favor?
Aye.
All those opposed or abstain?
Abstain.
Thank you. For the chair report tonight, I just wanted to make mention that we have Mike Seeley with us, who is a manager from the Community Development Department, in case we have questions come up that he might be able to serve as a resource for. Thank you for coming, Mike. Do you have a supportive services update, Patty?
Yes, we are moving forward with our 2017 speaker series, which will be focusing on supportive services. And we are meeting on November 4th at 1:30 with our community partners, including the AAA Public Health Department and the Community Services Department of Clark County. to go over, identify speakers and solidify our topics. So we're moving forward, and that will begin in March of 2017.
When our focus for next year will be supportive services?
Supportive services.
Anything from public health?
No, it's the same thing.
Linda, communication committee update?
Yes, we've had a meeting on October 7th, and we're still planning the housing summit that will be February 9th at the Red Cross building. We've secured a keynote speaker, Dr. Elliot Eisenberg, and we're excited about having a panel as well, and we're summing up and just finishing all of our details.
Thank you. Chuck, housing committee update?
Well, we met last week, and I don't know if I want to say too much more than that, except for we are working very, very diligently with our upcoming February summit, and one of the major pieces of that is going to be accessible, looking at a program that is called Visit Ability, and for housing, and so we're working on that, and we're also looking at then what is needed for accessible housing as far as access is concerned, sidewalks, streets, those kinds of things. So we're also looking at that. We're also looking into a number of grants, tax credits, those kinds of things if you're remodeling a home.
Tax credits for the person whose house is being remodeled.
For being remodeled, yes, okay. Yes. Anything else?
Good work. No, we've had some preliminary discussion about the policy direction, and we really appreciate the work of the Housing Committee, and you too. You too, Mary. Pat Janik, you've been our liaison to the Area Agency on Aging and Disabilities. Do you have a report for us?
Yes, I do. You have a report in your papers on your desk from the highlights of their last meeting. Also on the back are the tentative priorities, their legislative priorities. The council members have been meeting with their state candidates and talking about these legislative priorities, but they will be adopted at their senior fall conference October 26th and 27th. We might want to consider attending the Senior Lobby Day in Olympia, which is tentatively set for February 23rd, 2017, if some of us wanted to go with them and do some advocacy regarding some of these issues on a state level. And then there's a report on a couple of their other, three of their other current projects.
Mm-hmm. On the Senior Lobby Day, does that sound like something that we would be interested in doing? We can discuss it more later, but
yes.
And we've done that sometimes in the past, is that right?
Yes.
And I'm thinking, Chuck, we might have some things we want to say about housing policy at that time,
yes.
Too.
Mm-hmm. We will be ready.
Okay. Thank you, Pat. Mm-hmm. Tonight we have our ninth speaker in our housing series, where the primary emphasis has been on those 60 and over. Each speaker has addressed a different aspect, including factors to consider when moving, financing options, and the multiple dimensions of what it means to age in place. After our speaker, members of the Commission on Aging will ask questions of him, and then we will invite the audience to ask questions. Your questions are important to us because they have an influence on the policy recommendations we will be making to the Hart County Councilors and a joint meeting with them in January. And in February, Clark County is hosting a housing summit where our report will be discussed with policymakers and major players in the housing industry. Tonight, our speaker is Roy Johnson. Roy is the Executive Director of the Housing Authority of the City of Vancouver, and he will discuss the challenges of aging in place in public housing. Welcome, Roy.
Thank you, and good evening. Plus, as a representative of the Housing Authority, what I want to do is hit a couple of different subjects, one being our current availability of units for seniors, the funding for construction of these developments, past and present, the challenges, and then what our response is. And I'm in charge of this, and we'll see if I can do this. Thank you. So, the Housing Authority oversees, owns, or manages several different types of housing. And what I provided to you as a handout is this sheet that has all of our properties and the actual rents. So I'm just going to go through what these actually mean. When we're talking about public housing in our industry, that means units that we actually own that we receive HUD subsidy on. And then the other form of rental assistance is the Section 8, which we receive, and in most cases it's tenant-based, and the tenant identifies a property owner to rent from, and then we pay part of that rent. Now, Vancouver Housing Authority has gone through a transformation and actually no longer has any public housing. So the developments, for the most part, most of them have been transferred over into a hybrid Section 8 program that had came out with over the last couple of years. So we still have those hard units that we own, that we receive subsidy just for those units. And then there was the Section 8 new construction program that actually helped build senior developments around the country pretty much in the 70s. And then there was the HUD 202 program, the 11 program, that also the 202 program for senior housing development, and then the 811 for disabled households. Now, the Section 8 project-based vouchers are when the Housing Authority may identify that we're going to put them at a particular site, and we've done that at a number of locations. An example of some of these would be our Section 8 new construction is Columbia House, right across the street from our office. And then on the list, you'll see which ones are designated as HUD 202. Section 8 project-based voucher example would be our Vista Court, which you can just see out the windows out here, and that's a designated senior development. So another form of financing for senior housing is through the Low-Income Housing Tax Credit Program. And what that is that through the IRS code, that the state receives an allocation every year, and then for either 9% or 10%, you would end up competing and be able to receive some equity funds that help build. And I'll go in a little bit more detail on that. And then finally, there would be the bond issued. So I want to turn your attention to this sheet that I actually provided. And what I have identified is what the rents are and exactly what kind of housing they are. So if you were to look at examples like Columbia House, which you can see that we identify the rent for a one bedroom as $663. Now the fair market rent for Vancouver for a one bedroom is $1,053. Now what's even more important about this rent at Columbia House is that that's the maximum rent, so the tenant actually pays 30% of their income. So it's only if they have enough income that 30% would reach that 663 that they're actually paying that full rent. So with that's how it works with those subsidized units in the first group. In the second group, we have two identified as assisted living facilities, Arbor Ridge and Van Vista, We do have some subsidy going into those, but they also are, because of the assisted living, they receive the funding for support through the Medicaid, Medicare system. And then finally, in the workforce housing, you'll see Mill Creek Senior Estates and Wisteria Manor, and those actually are tax credit properties, and therefore they are not subsidized rent. So when it shows in rent here, that's what they actually pay. But the households all must be below a certain income to be able to live there, but they're still going to pay the same rent regardless of their income. Some of the things that are pretty important is that we also have, in addition to all these locations that we identify for senior housing, we have all our other sites that have one-bedroom units, and of course there's a lot of seniors that live in those. So some of the other low-income housing senior developments in Vancouver are ones that are not owned by us, but there is the Kirkland Manor, Smith Towers, which you're all probably very familiar with. Mm-hmm. And those were at 202 programs, so that means that they have lower rents. And then there's also Lewis and Clark downtown, which is a low-income housing tax credit project. And then Knights and Pythias has subsidized units as some of theirs is designated. Finally, there is the Isabel Court that is just opening right now that REACH has developed. And with that particular project, we're actually providing some rent subsidy to some of the units. And then when they start phase two, we've made a commitment to subsidize some of those as well. So they have 49 that have just opened, and then they hope to get funding to start late next year to develop a phase two, which would be the additional senior designated units. So in the funding for developments of designated senior housing in the past, as I mentioned, the Section 8 new construction, and that was the Columbia House, and then the 202 programs, which there are a number that the Housing Authority manages. The authority doesn't actually own those. A nonprofit developed by the authority owns those, the Columbia Nonprofit Housing, but it is our staff that administers or manages the properties. The reason that Columbia Nonprofit was the applicant is that housing authorities at the time that that program was up and running could not be applicants. And then Hope 6, I think the report that was sent out to you about public housing mentioned Hope 6. That was a highly competitive program, and it's not one that we received in Clark County, but it was used for major redevelopment. And then also I mentioned the low-income housing tax credits, which, not to get too technical, there's two different programs within that. One is the 4%, and that's one that you can apply for throughout the course of the year. It's becoming such that the credits may not be available all the way through the year just because of so many projects occurring in the state right now, because it's really quite a building boom. And then there's the 9%, which is an annual competition. And with the 9%, you are required to go to a lower level of income tenants. So generally, it's going to be designated at 30 and 50% of median income, whereas the 4% are actually up to 60%. So the 9% is preferred for any of the programs that we're working on, but it is highly competitive. So far, the Housing Authority has received the 9% for Vista Court. That was the first one ever. And then Columbia Nonprofit received one this year for a project that they're working on for behavioral health housing, and then Second Step Housing for supportive housing. So those two projects this past year, and then this upcoming year, either the Housing Authority or Columbia Nonprofit will be applying for additional housing, but it also will be more towards behavioral health and for homeless youth. So you can see that when it's the 9%, it tends to be for a very focused group. One of the things that I think is really important to point out is that although we go by area median income for determining who can be eligible to live in housing and then if they're eligible for subsidy, and since 2010, the area median income for 50% household has only increased 3%, whereas the rent for a one bedroom has increased 30%.
Wow.
So you can see how much more strain that is being created by the increases in the rents or incomes that have just stayed stable. And you probably also just heard too that, what is it, Social Security increases 1/3 of 1%. That's not going to help keep up with these 10-15% rent increases over a couple of year period. One thing that is kind of hopeful out there in the horizon is that Senator Capitol has introduced a bill to expand the amount of tax credits the state can give for 9%, and also made some really fine, good refinements. So hopefully we'll see that move forward. So as I noted on here too, to a lesser degree, there's also the home CDBG program and the housing trust fund that helps pay a small amount of these projects. Our last project, which Lincoln Place is a little bit special, but it's about $200,000 a unit. So it's very expensive to do developments. A 30-unit development will cost about $6 million. That's why these programs are very important. But if we go to the next slide, you can see what's happened as far as what's available for those programs now. So although there's a greater demand, more or less the programs that were for designated senior housing from HUD have completely disappeared. So you're really working with low-income housing tax credit program, and it really limits the level of that you can reduce the rents, just because you do have to be able to support debt with these as well. Whereas with these other programs, you generally did not have to have debt. So that makes it very, very challenging for going forward. And hopefully, if there will be a local fund that emerges that helps us within, well, I guess right now, the city of Vancouver, if that does pass, that those will be funds that we'll be able to use for future projects. So just looking, catch up with myself here. So the trends that we've seen in Southwest Washington, as everyone is very aware of, is the increase in homelessness and the rapid increases of rents and the low vacancy rates resulting in higher income individuals and more households being displaced just because they can't afford the rent. So I'm sure it's all fact or knowledge to all of you too that the rents in Vancouver were the highest in the nation this last year. And it was a very unusual year for the Housing Authority because we ended up increasing our payment standards 3 times during the course of the year. That's totally unheard of. But individuals were having more and more difficulty being able to use our subsidy because of the market the way it was. It also is a difficult time for tenants with rental assistance that try to go to the private sector because they also increase their screening criteria during times when there's low vacancy, so it makes it more difficult for people on very lean incomes to be able to make it through the screening. So we're also seeing what was in the news for the last 24 months is just properties that are leaving the low-income scene because they're being purchased and renovated and going to higher rents. And then finally, there's a lot fewer single-family homes available for rent. So what I'm laying out is all this bad news about difficulty of creating housing. So just a little bit more, and then we'll kind of turn around the corner. But there is a high demand, a lot of competition for what the low-income housing could be. As I mentioned, the 9% tax credits are very important to us, but the way that the criteria through the state right now is that it's a lower priority for a designated senior complex over something that is a supported service housing. So, personal opinion here, in the past, when we weren't seeing a lot of 9% here is because that wasn't the community need as much. We just needed senior housing. We needed housing for very low income families. So over the last couple of years, their high scoring on supportive housing for homelessness that our community needs a little bit much closer for that particular population. So that we can put in some applications, and that'll be through again next year. After next year, I think that we'll need to continue to go back to them and suggest that they open it up to just other populations so that we can stand a chance of competing and receiving some of these awards. So the other point is that the subsidy streams, such as our Section 8 program, become more and more stretched as the rents are increased. As we're paying more for each household, that means fewer households that we can help in the future. So what we try to do, any of our new enrollments right now are because people terminate off. We don't get new Section 8 vouchers unless it's for a very specific populations like veterans, and we compete for them, and we may get some vouchers that way. But otherwise, just for general population, that doesn't happen. We just have to live within the budget that we have. So, we're just looking at that poll that for places to be affordable for low-income seniors, they need some subsidy, but it's difficult to provide it right now. We also run across, and we see this in the units that we have, is that maybe a household has been in the same unit for many, many years, and as people move out, the size needed is not as important. And so you do have some resistance of the seniors to scale down into a smaller unit when that time comes, when they're over-occupying a unit. We also tried over a couple of years, tried to launch something with our Section 8 program to do a shared rental type arrangement to see if we can get individuals interested in being roommates, you know, and paying part of the roommates didn't fly. So we just recently dropped that. It just wasn't of interest to the people on the wait list. So what has to be considered is that, you know, we try to match need, and sometimes the alternatives are not as well received. So there's an ongoing decreasing source of funding for subsidized housing. There's low reimbursement rates for Medicaid, which really puts a crunch on the assisted living units that we do have and manage at Arbor Region and Vista. So without additionally layering some of our own housing subsidy onto those, we wouldn't be able to continue to operate them. And then finally, there seems it's probably a two-way street as far as how we could be collaborating more with the senior home service providers. We do have service elderly disabled service coordinators that I'll speak about in a moment that help quite a bit in that respect. But I'm speaking more of what was probably brought out in that report, that there could be a little bit more that we do in trying to make sure that people stay living independently. So first we have to also get others to want to come to us to make that work. So offering services on site, whether it's nursing care or just doing outreach at our locations. They also have to recognize that it's a savings to them in the long run to come to the most vulnerable population, which are ones that are generally in subsidized housing. So there's more that we can do there, and that's just something that we'll have to look at in the future. One of the things I don't want to skip over is just taking a look at still, again, at the status of where we are with what we can offer to seniors for housing. And I provided this sheet to you, which has the subsidized units. And you can see that most all of them closed. We have a couple of them open that will still take some applications. But you can also see what's most important is how many months or possibly years that a person is going to be on that wait list before they can get housed. So when you have closed wait lists, you really don't get a true understanding of what the real demand is because they're unable to come in and come forward and let you know. In our Section 8 program, the only ones that we open up for right now are two preferences. One is for homeless families referred by the school districts, and two is households referred by the home health system of individuals that fit the homeless definition that are chronic, have chronic health issues. And with this, we're just trying to leverage what other service providers are trying to do by having them housed. So jumping back to what we're able to do on site now is that we do have representatives from the Housing Authority here tonight that actually are the disabled service coordinators. And they are tied to particular sites of ours because of the funding that we receive from them. They are actually able to assist at 9 sites, which is 480 units, and that each of them probably case manages 40 to 50 households. That's not to say that they aren't providing service to a lot larger group, because then they'll do things that have interest to everyone that might be, you know, having someone come in and talk about wellness or to do some recreational socialization activities. So some of the things that I spoke with Sherry this morning, some of the things that really stand out in her mind as far as what causes some of the difficulties for the seniors with their health and such relates to excessive number of falls and medication support needs. So that kind of signals to us maybe what we need to do a little bit more in-house in trying to bring in some more services. We have to keep in mind, and we are inching away from that, we're a housing provider, we're a property manager, you know, and we have to do these other things, but we have to have the partners that do that for the profession come do it for us. So we just have to get better collaboration. So some of the other things that we see, of course, are the mental health and dementia. We only have a limited number of assisted living sites, so it's really difficult for where will people go when they can't live independently in our units. And then we also have not been able to get memory care facility off the ground quite yet. So if we go to my last slide here, is that we will look at in the future doing future developments with senior units designated. I don't expect that we'll be able to start to look forward to a new project until about 2018 that would finish up in 2019 or so that could be designated senior units if we took it on. But we do support other developers, and as an example is REACH with their project with us providing project-based vouchers. They were able to use that lower level of low-income housing tax credits to actually do their first project. So the increased grants that they get with the Section 8 help them make that be a possibility. Another program that we offer, and we have not had any takers yet, but maybe we will, is a rent buy-down program that we would just work directly with the private landlord, and they wouldn't be people that came through our Section 8 program, we would just be buying down their rents to about 60%. Level for a certain group of units. So we could probably do that with designated senior units. And then, as I mentioned, we have the Section 8 preference for home health referrals. So our things to do is look at the possibility of getting more assisted living and memory care, and then increasing our collaboration with the home health service providers. There we have it. I'm glad to answer any questions.
Thank you. Other questions, Alan?
Thank you for your presentation. Just one question about on the form you have here about the wait list.
Yes.
Can you describe what it means that they're regularly purged, the wait list,
or
what
sure.
that means?
You don't know.
Oh, well, I can assume, but I'd rather hear that.
Yes, about annually we'll go through and reach out and see if they're still interested. And that's something that we have to look at a little bit closer to, because this last time I think that she removed about 240 households, which is a lot, mm-hmm. you know, that have dropped off and didn't respond back.
Mm-hmm. We're sharing a microphone. We're doing it well, sharing. I have a question. I really agree with you when you say that the coordinating with the home health providers is really key. And first part, I want to know if you've made any advances in that department. because I think that that is a, you know, a gem that's really forgotten in our community at times, that not all the problems that we have with aging and seniors can be solved with brick and mortar. I think some of them can be solved with, you know, home services. So I was anxious to hear if anything's happening in that.
This might be one of those times I call Sherry Dad. You know, she's done a great amount, and the other two ladies, as far as to help individuals that are interested get signed up for those benefits, because that's part of it too, is making sure that they sign up for what could be provision of funding to pay for someone to help come in with cleaning or, you know, those types of things. So part of it is just doing that as well. As far as more of a coordinated type of approach of seeing if we could get enough quantity at a particular development to make it possible for someone to really focus on it, that's something that we need to do in the future.
Okay, thank you.
Other questions? I have one. Go ahead, Jen. You mentioned the Ray Vancouver home levy. What specifically would help if that were to pass from your point of view?
Well, it's a new source of funding that we don't presently have. You know, so in the past, the Housing Authority with the projects received housing trust funds quite frequently. Now that's not so much the case, mainly because it's not getting funded at the same level, and also because the last couple of years, the legislature has kind of stepped in and kind of set different priorities, and then it kind of threw things into whack as far as whether you were in that stream to apply or if you could be invited. So everything else is going away, it's what it comes down to. And there's no answer, there's no national answer through public housing or whatever to say this is how we're going to create more affordable housing.
So we fill the gap with that need.
Yeah, it's just that you have to use whatever resources you have available. You have to be innovative and creative in your own community to make it work.
Chuck, your question?
Well, in my researching and kind of looking around and everything, I found just actually yesterday that in the federal funded housing out there, that 95%, approximately about 95% of that housing is not designed or built to be accessible. Would you kind of agree with that, with what you guys have here?
If it's older stock, no, I'm just trying to think, you know, of course we take that into consideration with all the newer developments, but older developments, if someone has wheelchair needs or whatever, then yes, there's only certain units that are as adaptable. And now, as an example of this court, we made those that we could go in and adapt them if we need to, the rest of the units. So there's a major building design change in when we're looking at this.
So you're adapting them as there is the need to go for a person
Well, right now there's certain requirements as far as how many you'll put in that are fully accessible. And so we reach that level and go a little bit above it, but then make the other units possible that you can go in and adapt them later.
Okay, so you mentioned about the marketplace, and in the last 5 years, it seems like the market is, it's going up, and all of the abilities that you have to do something for the need is going down as rapidly as what it's going up.
That's real true. We've seen just between estimating what a project will cost and what it costs now, it went up 10%, you know, over a year, and you just, when you go for your financing, such it takes so long with public financing, by the time you get at the end, it's like, we're short, now what do we do? and then the sources are just not there. And unfortunately, too, you look in the past, you know, 20 years, 30 years ago, when all the different programs were out there that were funding things really well, it didn't really require and encourage collaboration. And so things weren't really built and designed in a way that you were taking advantage of having healthcare available or on a site or whatever the case. And now, you know, I think the light's on for us now, but the money's gone.
And so it's I know that the Justice Department has.
It wants me to leave.
The Justice Department has just come out with guidelines related to that kinds of housing, you know, and how to design and what to do and everything. And that's just in the last 2 years, you know, and so 3 years. And so you're absolutely right. I mean, it's taking us a long time to kind of get there and everything.
Well, and plus you bring up something too. There's the program might have its own requirements, and then you have the Fair Housing coming in putting some other requirements, so
yeah,
it gets confusing too.
Well, and I guess this is all kind of brings me around to, I have a whole bunch of notes here, but then what we've really been all about this last year is focusing on what we can do in the community as far as aging in place. So if we can provide better program for aging in place, that in turn will help your program out also, because the need, people will be able to stay in their place longer and not have to turn to your programs.
But that makes a lot of sense, and that's what we'd like to see as well. It occurs to me that aging in place, if we work together, is going to be a little bit more attainable in like our developments than a person living out of a single family home, that not only do they have their, you know, self-sufficiency things that are changing, but they also have the structure that needs major repairs and such. So it's complex. So when you have it down, you have,
well, we're looking at tax credits and all kinds of whatever, you know, to try to help that whole thing out. You know. But yes, it's very tough. Thank you.
Bill, you had a question?
Yeah, thank you for the helpful input you've given us here. I have a question that maybe you can respond to, maybe not. In light of things like the whole McCleary thing with schools and so on, I get into these conversations all the time. People saying, you know, we need all this money for schools, and I find myself saying, yeah, and we also need it for mental health, and we need it for homelessness, and there's only so much to go around. You can't manufacture money. And so on a state level, how do you see all of those things coming together vis-a-vis housing? Because everything you said is incredibly important.
Well, certainly we're all concerned what might happen with future funding for the trust fund, because that McCleary will trump a lot of things. So, you know, just wait and see. I'm not going to go any further.
Well, is there lobbying or whatever? I assume there is from all sides.
Oh, sure. There's the low-income housing alliance within the state, and sure, there's groups that have work in that.
It is just such a trick, because you see on the one hand the need for the money for schools and so forth, on the other hand the number of kids who are homeless in those schools, and it's not that simple.
We can talk about that
Thank you.
Yes. I'm interested in what your boundary is for the Vancouver Housing Authority, because I see Camas here and Battleground. So do you actually represent the entire county in your jurisdiction?
So the Housing Authority is the City of Vancouver Housing Authority, but there's a long-standing agreement in place that allows the Housing Authority to work with in Clark County because there's no other housing authority that would cover it. And then for developments within a particular city like Battle Ground or Camas, we would go in and get agreements separately for those particular developments.
Why don't you have agreements with other cities in the county? If they don't want to, or how does that work?
What we have to look at is where those greatest, where the greatest demand is, and we'll go as long as there's an opportunity, you know, with the land and the demand and the closeness to resources, especially, that's very important to us.
Yeah, I have a question because our focus is on senior housing and there's been a lot of activity and comments about how the senior population is increasing in Clark County. How are you addressing that issue, or is it something that you can put on the, how are you going to increase the senior need?
It is a very slow part that we can actually play just because of the fact of creating new units takes, the project would take from beginning to end to get all the funding and everything completed about 2 years. And what we have to look at is some of these other approaches like we are trying now, which is have some participation in another developer's completion of units, or to look at some existing units that could be designated for a particular population. So, you know, we just have to look at some of these that are just not us building more. It is working with others because we also have that same request for services coming from other sectors as well.
Thank you.
Other questions? Mary?
Isabella Court has been in the news. It's been something that we were very interested to see. And you mentioned that you partnered or you were of assistance to REACH in building that project. Can you elaborate on that?
What we did is we provided some Section 8 project-based vouchers for it. So in this first part, it's only 10. But that's all they needed to be able to get the additional cash flow to be able to put the project together. In the second phase, we are committing more to it. So it's one way that we're helping to make sure more affordable housing is created. It doesn't need to be ours, it just needs to be created. So that's really the approach that our board's been taking. And, you know, we're not only doing that, but as an example, Second Steps Project is acting as a developer forum and then step out of it.
So Roy, Isabella, correct me if I'm wrong, Isabella has all accessible units?
I cannot speak directly about their...
Yeah.
Did you say it does, Chuck?
Yeah, I was very fortunate to have been involved with that. REACH reached out to me and asked me to collaborate with their designers with this whole unit, and I'm expecting that's going to happen with the next building also.
Is that the one in Washougal?
No, it's off of Fourth Plain, about 62nd.
So, the Isabella Court example, having all of the units accessible, is something that we think is really important for the community, and so. When you have done developments in the past where a certain percentage was required in order to receive federal funding, can you tell me how many units then, like was it 50%, 20%, 5%?
In recent developments, it would probably be under 10%, but again, I'm saying that they're adaptable, but that we make other units adaptable so that we can go in and put in, you know, the grab bars and do those kind of changes that make it meeting a more fragile need. The older developments, it's a pretty low percentage. Mm-hmm.
You have
thank you.
The funding sources that you mentioned, besides low-income housing tax credits, did they all just expire and were not refunded? And is there any chance of getting other development monies in the community?
The example, like for Columbia House, that was, I don't think they had, they funded anymore past the 70s. And then with the Hope 6, we wouldn't be eligible for that anyway, just wouldn't meet the criteria to put back in place. The 202 program hasn't been funded since 2012. Mm-hmm. And it's just not looking likely that it'll come back in.
Okay, so now this is your turn. Members of the public have a question for Mr. Johnson.
Worrying about public housing seems to have been a kind of new thing on the street. I hear it from Portland on OPB a lot. My question is, has the number of homeless people vastly increased in the last, say, 5 years?
I think that would be a yes. I can't really respond to what that number is. Good question for the Council for the Homeless, but definitely an increase, mainly as I mentioned earlier, that with the higher rents, that pushed out more families that otherwise probably were housed.
I know this isn't a dictatorship, but why is it that landlords are able to fling these great increases on people? One of my friends had a $500 a month increase, which means, of course, that she's gone from that spot. And this same seems to apply in Portland, that the landlords can do what they please financially, and the burden gets thrown onto the city, the county, the taxpayers, whatever.
So in the state of Washington, right, there's it's not legal for a jurisdiction to have rent control. So unless the project was funded with a particular funding source like ours, they have the ability to raise the rent as high as what they can get if they choose to. And you know, so we see that with an increase in rents from Portland, then created, I think, some strain for us here as well. But it, you know, there unfortunately is not any real stops or controls to keep it at a certain level.
So the landlords get more money and the responsibility goes to people like you.
Well, we also have conscious of rent increases too, but I'd like to, you know, point out that when we do, we were able to turn that into cash flow for doing some additional improvements, because that's our mission. And I think that probably happens in the private sector as well. Maybe not as much as we'd like, but, you know, it does.
Well, it just seems unfair that one side is making a profit and the other side is dealing with the cost. And there's nobody we can go to and ask them why this is going on?
The best answer is, of course, to be able to create more of these that are income restricted for individuals that really need those. But otherwise, there's not much more that can be done at this point. I believe this, you know, the city has put in some controls about how frequently and how much notice we're doing rent increases. So that was one action taken.
Thank you for
being
answered.
Over here.
You mentioned the trends that were happening as far as the number of wait lists and the lack of housing, and that people won't downsize. But I think sometimes people aren't downsizing because there isn't a smaller apartment to move to, because there's a wait list for that as well. And what I'm finding is that because of the strain on the rental market, management companies don't have to provide their business center anymore, or the coffee that they used to, or clean the carpets, because people can't complain because they don't have anywhere else to go. So it's created this monopoly, and they're abusing the power. And our seniors, and probably majority are women that are getting hurt by this. And I don't know how to stop that, making it so people feel afraid that they're going to be homeless, feel afraid they're going to be addicted, feel afraid their rent's going to go up more than they can afford. So there's this anxiety. And I'm sorry, when you're 65 or 75, you shouldn't be worrying about that. You can't make new income. If there's nowhere to go for extra funding, you can't get a second or third job, or a first job if you've got, you know, some aging-related issues. I'm seeing wonderful people around the county getting really hurt by these practices. Is there legislation, something that can be done that creates... I find that management companies, if they're based in California, Minnesota, New York, or whatever, they look at a balance sheet and all they see are numbers and their income statement, and they don't see people. Mm-hmm. And so they never put a face to who they're kicking out. They never have to see that. They never have to experience it. But our community has to experience it. It doesn't make sense to me. We are a community. We have to take care of our vulnerable populations. And it doesn't sound like we're doing it. And I'm kind of here new on this game, but I've been working with seniors for years.
And how do you work with seniors?
I own Home Instead Senior Care is a company that I own here in Vancouver. I've owned it for 10 years. And I just, as I've grown in this business, I see the need. I see where the holes are, but I've not seen what I'm seeing today. These ladies here are all from the vintage Vancouver, and they're all worried that they're going to be removed from the building. And I go there to talk, to answer questions to folks that might need a little advocacy, and 50% of the building shows up to every meeting because they're so concerned. But they won't say anything to management because their fear is that they'll be retaliated against. And they feel that they are being retaliated against. I've provided to them 150 copies of the laws regarding rent in Vancouver, and they put them out in all the doors at the building. The management company went in moved all of the ones that weren't collected. They don't want me on the property. Why? What are they doing that they're afraid for me to be there and kind of being an oversight or sitting with somebody while they're renewing their contract? So if they have questions or they're confused or concerned, they've got someone with them. I feel like it's something that we need to act on now. It needs to be something that's done sooner than later. To ease the worry of the folks that are, I'm sure it's not just senior population. I'm sure anybody that's in subsidized housing, if the management company isn't in state, my guess is they probably manage it the same way this company does it.
I think you've well articulated the problem, and I can tell by the head nodding that she's speaking for many people who are feeling that fear right now. While we as the Commission on Aging cannot address it, what we are doing in our series is making note of what's important to people and what their needs are. Those are shared with our county counselors and beyond as well. So that's all we can offer tonight. But I think we all hear, it's easy to see in your faces that there's fear. So we get that. No, that's right.
All of a sudden, when I get there, I'm at 60, but I grew up with 80, and they were petrified. They won't come out of their door because they're afraid of the retaliation.
Mm-hmm.
They should not.
then the other concern is the wait list. Is that a public thing? I mean, they can tell you there's a wait list, but are they dispersing the rental units as they come up to the correct people? Or are they getting the higher rents in for those open apartments? Nobody can see the wait list, so nobody knows.
So can you tell us how the wait list works?
We're talking about a project that development that's not our spot. I'm not sure what the breakdown is of market rate or tax credit, so I really can't. But I would like to suggest, Sherry, if you disagree, you tell me, but that at one of your tenant meetings, that you invite property management, that you invite someone from the Office on Aging or someone that would be present to maybe be that face for you and to talk for you. If that's what he means.
We're not allowed to have this kind of meeting. He's abandoned this. They have stopped her from coming in and having group meetings. She can.
I'm not talking about her. I'm talking about someone from the Office of Aging contacting them and trying to arrange a meeting or some other agency similar to that. So that's just a consideration. But each wait list is going to be different. Our wait list, you know, you wouldn't be able to, if you were that person, you could check where you're on the wait list. But you wouldn't be able to call and say, is Margaret Smith on your wait list and at what position? You know, we wouldn't do that.
So should they contact Sherry after the meeting or touch base with her?
She might have some ideas. She's a great resource of the EHA. She's one of our tools, so.
It looks like you'd be happy for ideas. So. Okay, so is there another question?
Hi, Rebecca Brown with Meals on Wheels People, and I actually have a question. I see a lot of women in their 70s and 80s living in cars and not having any other options. And so my question is, how many beds for emergency situations do we have for women specifically in Clark County?
It's very low. I can tell you that. It's a very low number because there's the domestic abuse shelter, and then there's two other shelters that I think I've heard before that maybe a dozen designated beds or something and shelters for women. So it's not sufficient, and that's one of the things that I know they've been looking at locally as far as what part of this response needs to be is specifically shelter for women. Mm-hmm.
Are there other questions? Over here.
Yes, my name is Grace Bailey. I'm looking at this wait list. And the second one from the bottom, Van Vista, has 39 units, but the application on wait list is 981 and still open. So my question is, are people allowed to go to different property and get on different wait lists at the same time? Or a person can only, or household can only allow to be on one wait list? And a second question is, suppose a person gets a Section 8 voucher in Portland, is this person or household allowed to move to Vancouver and, you know, use that voucher, or what's the rule? I'm just not familiar.
Okay, as far as the wait list, yes, the individuals apply for all the different open ones because, you have a better chance of getting in a little bit sooner. Van Vista, when it says 39, there's actually also 60 units that are assisted living, but these are the 39 that are independent living. The assisted living units come through referrals of the provider. So, yes, onto the multiple wait list. And yes, on the ability to bring a voucher from another community here, we welcome them. So you have to get permission. If you happen to be one of those individuals, you have to get permission from the issuing voucher site, and then they contact us, and then there's a whole process for it. And yes, that's possible.
Colette, there's a lady with a question here. I see your glasses. Stand up. Maybe Colette can find you better.
I have a question to piggyback on what Chuck was saying, but first I wanted to comment, if it makes anybody feel any better, I was at a meeting 3 or 4 weeks ago where Ann McEnery-Ogle, our city council member and Mayor Pro Tem, was present, and she was asked how many units are under construction right now in Vancouver, because it seems like you can drive around an awful lot and see complexes going up. And she said, between being under construction right now and in the permitting process through that spectrum, there are 3,500 units presently in the works just within the city limits of Vancouver. So that's definitely going to raise our vacancy rate from, so that there are going to be more vacancies. Now, what the rents are going to be, who knows, because land has shot through the roof as far as buying land to build these properties. But we do have units coming online. And in talking about accessible units, is there now, or do you know if there ever has been, as you know, it's expensive to take an existing unit and modify and put in the doorway, the wider doorways and the appropriate kitchen and so on. Is there or has there ever been any kind of tax credits or anything for private landlords to encourage those modifications?
Well, as far as for doing modifications tax credit-wise, I'm not familiar with any of them. I just don't know that there really isn't much resources out there to help someone to make them adaptable. You know, when we're building now, we do the wider doors, but we don't have that concern, because that was part of that in the past. I also want to call her out, Carolee. She is a landlord, but she's a real sweetheart, so. So unless you're doing a major renovation, you're going to turn it over to a full tax credit. But for individual sites, no, I don't. I'm sorry.
Joe, is your question for Mr. Johnson?
Yes. Not a question.
I didn't think so.
I know. I'm not going to ask questions. I know Roy Johnson. Of all the speakers you've had, this guy knows more about housing than anybody I know.
Okay.
In this community. Good man. However, he doesn't know construction costs. A lot of taxpayer money is being wasted in federal housing buildings right now. Millions of dollars. The people in this community are being lied to, they're being cheated, they're being deceived. Out of millions of dollars, and nobody's talking about it. And I've been to Vancouver Housing Authority meetings, and I told them, you're not building affordable housing. Here's a good example. Here's a 30-unit that they built. $6 million, $200,000 per unit. That's too much. Now, the reason I know that, years ago, I built an 8-unit with the same type of unit. It was a market. There's always a market for studio apartments, always. There's a lot of turnovers, but there's always a market for it. And in those days, if I tell you what it cost me to build it, I'd embarrass him. But of all the people you've had so far, he knows the stuff more than a lot of these other guys you've had before are the cause of the problem that we have housing problems right now.
Okay, I appreciate your point of view, but let's move on to some other questions here.
You've got to look at the truth.
Well, you got to wrap it up, Joe.
No, I don't have to.
Yeah, you do. It's time to share.
I think I know the answer to this question. However, what is the prospect for future funding in the next 15, maybe 20 years when the crisis really hits? We don't have a crisis now. We got a problem. But the real crisis is coming when the baby boomers finally reach retirement. What's your thought for future funding?
Well, as I mentioned, that there's a bill that's being introduced to increase the amount of tax credits that come into the state for us to be able to compete for. And then otherwise, I think it's just been going towards the direction that we have to come up with these local resources to be able to answer it, because it's just not going to come on a federal system.
So it's become a political problem and we need to face it.
Right.
There's a question out here. Go on.
I might be
an answer to your question, there's something called the Washington State Access Fund. I was just looking it up online here to make sure that it's there. There's funding available for home modifications for accessibility. And I think it's about $10,000 per home. And I'm not sure if multifamily units are.
A lot of times they're limited to homeowners. They discriminate against renters that way.
Okay. Thank you for providing a possible resource.
Roy, quick question. How much of that potential tax that's on the Vancouver ballot would be used by Vancouver Housing Authority?
Well, we would be one of the groups competing, and we probably do more, create more affordable housing than others, but then there's also REACH and a second step housing. They also create housing too. So ultimately, someone creating housing is hopefully going to compete quite well and create some new units. They have some sectioned off for other purposes as yeah. far as direct subsidy and I think also for shelter support, but a good share of it is for hard units.
Good question, Bill. Was there one more question out here? Okay. Thank you so much. I appreciate it. We have one item of new business. Last time we talked about tracking volunteer hours, so I need a motion to rescind 3.0 volunteer hours from our policy and procedures.
Marjorie, I move to rescind 3.0 volunteer hours.
Okay, is there a second?
I second it.
All in favor?
Aye.
All opposed? And so we have it. So, next time, our speaker is Aaron Murphy, and he will be speaking about the future of housing and how it will change from how we live now. He does have, he is an architect and he's in real estate. He's an aging in place specialist, and he will be telling us a little bit about technology and homes. So thank you all for attending. No further business, we are adjourned.
I got the answers.